Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about taxes, getting a raise, and gigantic tax refunds. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. This week, we're going to talk about the big, scary monster that is taxes. I'll try to stay off my soapbox about tax filing companies and why we even have to file taxes, but no promises. It's a topic that can really get me chatting, but today we are in for a great one. I have a great guest lined up for today's Money Talk, and we're going to be able to hear about what you should be thinking about with taxes. Should you be thinking about them year-round instead of in just April each year? There's a lot more that can go into proper tax planning if you just get a little bit of a head start. I know that for a lot of you listening, taxes can be a very, very daunting topic and something that can scare a lot of people away from even trying. But I've set up today's conversation to help you pick some of the low-hanging fruit that you can grab onto and make work in your personal finances. Today, we're going to be addressing the age-old myth about paying more taxes when you get a raise. We're going to talk about bonuses and why they always seem so small, which I'll just tell you right now, it's because those tend to get withheld at the highest tax rate for some reason because I think it's because your employer is a little too lazy to do the math, but they're worried it's going to push you over into other tax brackets, so they just withhold a lot of taxes, and it leads to you having a refund. So that's why bonuses always seem so small. It's not because the government's actually taking more money. You're going to get it back in your refund, but it's just the way that employers process it. Now, when should we be thinking about taxes? That's going to come up in today's conversation, and there's so many things in the tax world that a little bit of planning can help you out with. But in today's Skylar story time here at the beginning, I want to talk to you about refinancing student loans. We refinanced most of my wife's student loans. We're finally away from Nelnet except one small loan, which I can just leave on autopay and not have to worry about calling Nelnet about loan payments misapplying to wrong loans. I am so glad to be done with that headache. But the math on this refinance saved us thousands of dollars, actually thousands of dollars in the long run. And now that's money that we'll maybe never see come into our account, but it's money that we won't see leave our account. And that's kind of the tricky place to be in when you're considering saving money on refinancing. It's not necessarily money that you're gonna just see deposited into your checking account or deposited into your savings, but it's money that's not gonna leave the account. And that's real money and real opportunity cost. So if you wanna talk about an opportunity around refinancing, schedule a time for us to chat using the link in the show notes. And I would love to talk with you more and work you through the math of what a student loan refinance or any sort of loan refinance could do for you. And one more thing before we get into introducing today's Money Buddy, remember that episode 200 is coming up very soon, and I want to do an AMA style episode, so I need your questions. Send a text using the link in the top of the show notes, email me, however you want to get me your questions, I need some more. I would love to hear each and every one of your questions, so please send them my way, and I will make sure to answer them on episode 200, which is coming up very soon in just a few weeks. But today's Money Buddy is Kyle Beltel. Kyle is a CPA who specializes in helping small business owners uncover large tax savings. While reducing the time associated with taxes, his clients say that they enjoy working with him because he keeps things simple and efficient, which is what we're all about on this podcast, simple and efficient. Kyle has helped clients identify tens of thousands of dollars in tax savings, and today he's going to help us identify the reason why we need to be thinking about taxes more than just once a year. And the money talking points for this week are, how can we avoid taxes? And two, should I avoid making more money to avoid paying more taxes? And three, how can taxes be simpler? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Kyle to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
This will be a fun conversation. We're talking a little bit more about taxes. There's a common myth that I'm excited to bust. It's going to be fun to narrow this down and help people figure out some opportunities and maybe some of the common misconceptions around taxes. I know this is an area that can be especially intimidating, and I want to kick us off with one of the common myths. Will someone end up making less money when they get a raise because their taxes are going to suddenly balloon?
That is a great question, a very common misconception. Just on Monday, I was meeting with some clients for the very first time. It was a doctor and his wife. First question out of the gate, she's like, I'm really concerned about my husband taking on additional shifts because it's going to push us into a different tax bracket. And what I was able to walk through with them was how we have a progressive tax system. Basically, what that means is that you only will end up paying higher taxes on the portion of your income that kicks you into that next bracket. So as an example, let's take a couple. They're making $97,000 right now. $97,000 is right at the edge of the 12% tax bracket. If one of them gets a raise of $3,000, suddenly they're making $100,000 a year. Then that puts them into the 22% bracket. They're not suddenly paying 22% on all $100,000 of their income. They're only paying it on that extra $3,000 that pushes them from the 12 into the 22. It's not going to disproportionately affect your taxes.
It would be silly if it would like just change your entire tax rate across the board, and then suddenly your after tax is less than it was before. Then there would be a case to not get raises, which would be so silly.
Right. One of the concepts that may be new to some people is the difference between a marginal tax bracket and an effective tax bracket. The marginal bracket is the bracket that your last dollar of income falls into. So the couple we were just talking about, because they have 100K of income, their marginal bracket is 22%. However, the real thing you want to take a look at is, what's my effective rate? The effective rate is when you take your tax bill and you divide that into your income. And that's where you could see those different tax brackets at work, because for someone who earns a flat $100,000, their effective rate is only 12%. So you got to keep in mind effective versus marginal brackets.
Yeah. And one thing that I really never want anyone to do is say, no, I don't want that raise because it's going to make me pay more taxes. It's such a bad approach. And in my eyes, it's like, if you're making money, that's a good thing. Like, if you have to pay taxes, it's obviously not great, but it's kind of a sign that you're doing well if your taxes are increasing. But should people, with this idea of marginal and effective, should we always just be looking to make more money? Is that a good idea to have?
I definitely think so, Skylar, and I'll give you two reasons why. The first one is, I really try to communicate with my clients, it's not about how much tax you're going to pay this year. It's about how much tax you're going to pay over your entire lifetime. Don't just get focused on minimizing taxes today. Take the big picture and think about minimizing taxes over your entire lifetime. For people to be in a season of life where perhaps they're a high earning W-2, they're not eligible for all of the deductions and credits that are out there as a W-2 employee, but that extra income that they're earning, it's going to give them cash to put aside that maybe they can seed their own business. Maybe they can get into real estate there, where once they're a business owner, once they're owning real estate, that's going to open up a whole new world of deductions and credits that they're going to be eligible for. When you're playing the long game there, I think that's the perspective to take. The first reason that I always say, earn as much as you can and play the long game. But the second reason, I'd rather have a little of something than zilch of nothing.
Yeah, and I have to pay a little bit of taxes on it.
Yeah, I mean, even in a worst case scenario, let's say we have someone who's in the state of California, and I'm picking on California just because they tend to have some of the highest state taxes in the country. The highest earners in California are getting very close to paying 50% in taxes there. And I get it. I mean, that stinks to have instantly half of what you just earned vanish. Even if someone is not taking advantage of any tax strategies, they're in a high tax state and losing 50%, I'd still rather have 50% of a lot than 0% of nothing.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Would you rather be making nothing or very little just for the sake of paying less taxes? Yeah. No.
Well, if I came to you and I said, hey, I got a 50-cent piece here, you know, those John F. Kennedy coins, you can have as many as you want. How many would you take?
All of them?
Yeah, all of them. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I love that. Don't stop making money just out of the fear of taxes. They're not something to be feared. Anyone can learn the ropes, some basic guidelines, and some ways to reduce their taxes. And let's say someone does get that big raise and they say, wow, that did push me up into the next tax bracket. How can people use a raise at their workplace to potentially lower their taxes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for people who are earning more than they need, there are a lot of great options out there. Certainly giving and utilizing things such as a donor advised fund to be more strategic with your giving is a great way to put some of that to use. Retirement accounts. I can't say enough good things about tax advantage retirement accounts, particularly the 401k. I'm a huge fan of, just because of the amount of money it allows people to contribute to. The Roth IRA, again, no tax savings today, but if we're taking the long approach of paying the least over our lifetime, the Roth IRA is incredibly powerful. HSAs are another great tool. If you're not familiar with an HSA, that stands for health savings account. And if your employer offers health insurance that has a high deductible plan, you are eligible to put money into this special savings account called a health savings account. Now, very important, don't pick an HSA just because of the tax benefits. Make sure that it fits in with your family.
Yeah, there's more to
it. If it does, it's incredibly powerful because it is the trifecta of tax. The money goes into it tax-free. The money earns interest in the account tax-free. And if you pull the money out for health-related expenses, it comes out tax-free. It's one of the only tools out there.
Yeah, I have talked the HSA up on this show a lot. It's something my wife
and I'm preaching to the choir.
Yes. And I tell everyone that my wife and I haven't invested. Ours is at Fidelity, right?
Yes.
And
same here.
It's grown and grown over the last couple of years to the point where my wife gets massages, right? And she's gotten a letter to make that qualified medical expense. But it's grown enough that she gets these monthly massages for free because we just pull out the growth and it continues to grow and it's all tax-free. The government has never touched that money and they never will. You can get some real fun, awesome strategies around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Skylar, the beauty is, even in some wild scenario where someone has perfect health, once you reach retirement age, you can take money out for non-medical expenses and you just have to pay your normal income tax rate. Well, that's just a backdoor IRA at this point.
Are there other areas in people's finances that making more money and getting that larger job, especially like say it's your first job out of college, you've been living on loans for the last few years, and you're finally starting to make money, what other areas besides retirement accounts or lowering taxes could this increase in money impact?
Yeah, that's a great question, Skylar. You know, I've been talking a lot so far about lowering taxes, but at the same time, people should be enjoying their lives and making sure that, you know, they're going on vacations, they're buying some fun things, you know, they're spending time with family members and loved ones. There's so many great things you can do with excess cash. And it's really about finding a balance there between, you know, enjoying your life and minimizing your taxes. But in my book, the absolute best thing you can do with any excess cash you have is to pay off debt. Love them or hate them, I think Dave Ramsey hits the nail on the head when he encourages you to be debt-free, because in my book, being debt-free is really the linchpin that allows you to succeed financially in life over the long term. So paying off debt is huge. And secondly, you need to find a great CFP to work with who's going to help you clarify what those goals are over your lifetime. Again, are you looking to fund education? Are you saving for some life events? Are you looking to be more charitable to organizations that you're passionate about? And so a great CFP is going to help you clarify those goals and point you in the right direction of the investments. Great CPA myself is going to be working in tandem there to say, how can we also make sure that we're being as tax advantaged as possible. Yeah. So many great things you can do with excess cash.
Yeah, and the thing that's fun with working with professionals, you and I are in the money realm. So if we work with a professional on building a house or lawn maintenance or things like that, working with a professional provides you their knowledge base. It provides us with the knowledge base that we frankly don't need to bother ourselves with because there's other people that know it. And that's the fun thing you get to do when you start working with a professional. You get access to this wealth of different things you could do, and you're going to hear so many that you've never heard of. So I think that's when you start making more money. You don't realize, maybe you never heard of an HSA, but you listen to this episode and you hear us talking about them like they're just a common everyday occurrence, because they can be and they can be easy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that a professional can bring into your life. But I do want to talk about that debt thing you mentioned and how people can think through it. For me, my brain is very math focused. I'm a huge money nerd and I want the spreadsheet to work out. I am much more on the side of the arbitrage of interest rates and things like that. How do you suggest people, like maybe someone's listening, they're like, why would I pay off all my debt? And then you have other people saying, get rid of it. How do you strike that balance?
Yeah, that's a really good question there. Out of curiosity, have you read the Psychology of Money?
I don't believe so. I think I've heard of it. Maybe I have.
I certainly would encourage all the listeners out there to listen to that book, or excuse me, to read that book. I listen to it as an audiobook, but I think it's a fantastic book. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is that he has what I consider to be a really great chapter on debt. Is it a tool or is it this snare in our financials? I believe what he argues convincingly is a lot of that comes down to your personal risk tolerance. Mm-hmm. He even goes into talking about how the author says, you know, I paid off my house early. Why did I do that when I had a really cheap, and again, the arbitrage was in my favor? He said, because me and my wife, it just felt right.
Yeah, and sometimes that's the answer.
Sometimes that's the answer, right? Because, you know, if your greatest money-making asset is your ability to run a business and the value you're bringing through that business, you need to have undivided attention on that. It is, you know, in the back of your mind about, hey, I've got this debt on my car or my house there.
Or something, and that's goes wrong with it and it's just weighing
you down. Yeah, it's distracting you because of where your risk tolerance is. In my opinion, you're going to do better financially by just putting that debt to bed and focusing 100% on where you can bring the most value.
Yeah, it's been a minute since I've shared this story, so I feel I'll bring it up again with my wife's student loans. I am this math brain. I can build a spreadsheet and show us the optimal way to put it in a CD that's making a little bit more. We got the loans a while ago, so it wouldn't have been that hard to put the math in our favor. I'm sitting here saying, let's make the minimum payments. We'll invest the difference. Most people don't actually do that, but we were set up to give that a shot and put the other money away. I turn to my wife and she is almost in tears. I'm like, what did I say? I didn't say anything. I gave us a good math problem. And it allowed me to recognize, and she spoke this as well, that the loans to her represented the requirement to keep working. Like maybe she wanted to take some sort of sabbatical or a month off or something, or keep working, but just not feel like she was forced to because of these loans. So I'm saying, oh, well, the answer became obvious at that point. It wasn't the minimum payment. We needed to find a balance between paying off in 6 months or something and just throwing all of our possible money at them, which would have probably not been the best solution because we need the money elsewhere. We were able to find that balance and we've stuck to that plan ever since, and we're able to invest That's more awesome. Beyond that. Like you said, it's about finding that balance, and it can be tricky, but it's possible.
Yeah. And you bring up a really great point there, Skylar, in that if you are married or in a serious relationship, you can't just be making these decisions in a vacuum. You need to be making that with your significant other there, because happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, that's a good saying to go by. If you're the man in the relationship managing the money, your math is probably not as important, and that might be a tough pill to swallow. Awesome. Well, let's transition to talking again about taxes and tax planning. Tax planning is a fascinating area in my mind. I think it has a whole lot of potential, and that if people did it in their mind, they could manage their taxes a lot better. Like for my wife and I, we last year did some capital gains harvesting because we were in the 0% long-term capital gains bracket, actually. So we took some of that at a tax-free rate and reinvested it just to raise our basis.
Living the dream.
Yeah, it was a cool thing to do because I'd heard about it for years and I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. So I read up on it, tried it, and it worked. There's some planning opportunities that people can do throughout the year if you're just paying attention to it. One of them could be an itemized deduction. It could be saving up your charitable contributions and doing them in a bigger lump sum. Let's maybe just paint the picture out the gate. One of the things that everyone has to choose from, and they probably just go with the standard deduction because it's easiest, but what is the difference between this magic standard or itemized deductions?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're thinking to yourself, what is a standard deduction? Basically, it is a free deduction that the government gives to all individual taxpayers. There. For those of you filing single for 2025, the standard deduction is now $15,000. $750. And if you're married, it's $31,500. You get this free deduction. Now, the government says you can do that, or if you have deductions that are itemizable, those would be things like medical expenses, taxes paid to your state or local government, interest expense on a home, or charitable contributions. Those things qualify as deductions, and if you add those up and they're more than the standard deduction, you can take those itemized deductions instead.
How does that deduction apply to your taxes? What does it actually do on the back end? Does it give you $30,000 back as a tax refund?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's go back to that illustration I started with about the couple making $100,000. In that illustration, I was keeping it simple and they were just paying tax on that $100K. But in reality, if we were to follow that $100,000 through the tax return, before we calculate the tax, we would actually be deducting either their itemizable deductions or their standard deduction. It's $31,500 this year. So instead of paying tax on $100K, they only have to pay tax on $68,500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can be a big deal because then you're not worried about that mythical, my taxes on everything is going to go up, right? Now you actually realize you're still in the lower bracket, that average or effective rate comes down again because of this. And that could potentially give you even more room. Like I just mentioned that strategy of capital gain harvesting, like maybe that knocks you down into that 0% bracket and you can say,
right,
our investments are up big time over the last few years. We could take that 0% rate a whole lot more. The 0% is for married filing jointly, I believe is right around 96,000. So now it knocks you back down to about 60,000-70,000. Maybe there's some wiggle room there that you could take some more money tax-free potentially.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunities that we're just, obviously your specific situation is different. So there's always that heavy disclaimer looming over our conversation here, but there's so much potential that you could still do if you start talking to professionals or just talking with other people to say, hey, does this make sense? And this is where it leads into my next question of what's kind of the difference of filing taxes on your own? Should everyone just do it on their own? Should everyone pay for someone? Like where can we strike that balance of getting help versus doing this on our own?
That is a great question. And man, I wish I could distill that down into a perfect formula, Skylar, but
when your income's at a certain rate or something,
I have to give the classic, it depends, right?
Yeah.
But some basic rules of thumb, if the only income you have is from a W-2, you're probably going to be okay filing by yourself.
Mm.
If you have a side hustle or a small business that you run where you're getting 1099s, and that income is being reported on a Schedule C as a sole proprietor, if you're making less than $150K, again, you'll probably be okay.
The tax software is pretty good to figure out some of that stuff for you.
And there's not a lot of opportunities at those levels that you could miss. Mm-hmm. That tax software is not going to hit on for you.
Yeah.
I would say once you get north of $150K of income there from non-W-2 sources, it's probably a good time to start interviewing some tax professionals. Getting into rental properties.
Yeah, that's a big one that can be a headache.
I just started working with a client. His name's Ivan. And he filed his own taxes in 2023 using over-the-counter box software. Nothing wrong with that per se. He had just done it himself. He was a DIYer. Yeah. Came to me and said, you know, I filed 23. I haven't been audited, but I got this feeling I didn't do it right. And I helped him with 24. And then we went back and we took a look at 23. And sure enough, he hadn't put the data into the software correctly for his new rental house. Garbage in, garbage out. Because of that, he ended up missing some pretty key deductions around the depreciation of his rental property there. And so I was able to go back, help him amend 23, get those additional deductions there. And actually, the amount of taxes that I saved him were twice what the fees that I was charging him.
Easy decision.
I know it can often feel expensive when you're paying for professional help, but you know, Tommy and I have seen how a lot of times it actually costs you more and you don't even realize it.
Yeah, because you just don't know what you don't know there. Yeah, there's a lot of potential gaps. And I think if there's one thing that I know, I don't think the IRS is going to go back through returns and say, oh, you messed up. We actually owe you more money.
Yes, so
let's audit you and give you more money. I don't think that's going to happen. So you need to be careful about making sure you're actually taking care of what you should and what you rightfully are owed and get back. So that's a great story. I like that.
If you're on the fence about whether you should do your own taxes, interview some tax professionals there to get their opinion, because a good quality tax professional is going to be honest with you.
I've had people come to me. It's not worth it because you can do it on your own.
Yes, we already have too much work as it is. We don't want to take on a quote unquote simple return.
Yeah, a $70,000 W-2.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things I would recommend here, the American Institute of Certified Tax Professionals. If you just go to certifiedtaxcoach.org, there you can find a CTP in your area. This is an organization I've been involved with, and they are, some full disclaimer, but just met so many incredible tax professionals through that there. And it's a great place to start if you're looking for someone who can help you specifically with savings there, but also is going to give you an honest opinion about whether you should be working with a pro.
Yeah, and that can be valuable because they could say, you can do this on your own. Yeah. The software can help you. And you're like, oh, maybe it instills some confidence in you.
Yeah.
And you realize, hey, I can do this on my own. But are taxes something that we should be thinking of year round? Or is it something that we just need to wait till February through April to deal with? What are some opportunities for us to be thinking throughout the year about it?
Well, in my opinion, the best time to start planning for taxes is on January 1st.
Yeah.
Because there are things happening throughout the year that you want to make sure that you capitalize on with your tax pro. Very much like a choose your own adventure story. There's going to be paths that you come to early in the calendar year that you need to choose left or right. Getting that guidance ahead of time is key so that when you get to April 15th, you can look back and see success. Here's a great story around that, Skylar. I am currently working with two guys, Adam and Jack. They own a consulting business. Adam had started the business and kind of came across Jack, realized that they really clicked, and he said, I want to bring you on as my partner. And so they came to me saying, hey, this is what we're going to do for 2025. As I began asking them questions and as I began unpacking some of the implications around the taxes, around the cash flow with distributions there, they began to realize it may be actually better for us, better for the business, if we went in until 2026 to formalize this partnership. Conversely, 3 or 4 years ago, I had a client come to me in March and said, oh, by the way, we gave ownership, gave 10% equity to one of our hotshot employees. Unfortunately, they didn't do it correctly. And I had to go back to this employee, young 20s, newly married.
The opportunity.
Excited about the opportunity, excited for what's ahead, trying to get their financial feet under them, so to speak, and say, you owe $30,000 in taxes because how this was handled. There and
they
so
don't have $30,000.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And actually, that's why I kind of say tongue in cheek, January 1st is the best time, because really you want to be making decisions throughout with your tax professional. So when you get to that April 15th, you can look back with confidence.
Yeah. And if there's one thing to be proactive about and not reactive about, it's taxes. If you can think about what are the tax implications of this decision before I make it, then you can compare them, because maybe there's a better tax optimized way to go, especially if you're getting into business stuff, like if you're depreciating things or trying to take certain deductions or credits or whatever, what have you, right? If you're thinking about it beforehand, there's opportunities, just like any other investing decision or purchase decision. You don't go into a car purchase and say, I'm just going to buy this car. And then a year later say, what do I do about my car purchase? Which one should I buy? You're already saddled with the big one or whatever, right? People look at taxes in such a weird way.
Well, can I tell you another story? Another benefit of working with a professional is that we're up to date on what's going on with the law and the changes to the law. A great example of that is I was working with a guy. He owned a manufacturing company and he needed to buy equipment. It wasn't about the taxes so much as he genuinely needed to buy it. And it was December. And he said, how is this going to impact my taxes? I said, let me ask you something. Are you able to wait 4 weeks until we're in January? He said, yeah, I don't need it right away. And the reason I proposed that to him, so I'm in Pennsylvania. He also is in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was about to change the rules for state deductions for Section 179. And it went from $25,000 to $1 million. So simply by just waiting on the timing there, he was able to have no cap on his equipment purchases. So again, not making those decisions in a vacuum oftentimes will pay dividends over the lifetime of your business and over the lifetime of your personal finances.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen something similar or other tax professionals have where they don't consult you first. They make that purchase and you say, well, if you would have waited 2 weeks, here's like you show them the different math, make them feel bad.
Yeah.
Right? No.
Yeah.
it can be that big of a difference. And I want us to close out here with another tax myth that we can bust. And that is your tax refund. You file those forms and you tell your employer how much to withhold. Should we just have them withhold it all so we get that giant tax refund? Can we break down the refund?
Heck no, no, no. Get it, Skylar. A massive tax refund feels great.
Looks cool.
Essentially, you have overpaid throughout the entire year, and now the IRS is giving you back your own money with zero interest. You know, you've just played bank to the IRS for
Start thinking about inflation with that money too.
Think about what you could be doing with that extra money. You can be investing it and earning interest. You can pay down debt and get rid of interest expenses.
You could enjoy it.
Yeah, you can enjoy it. You can take a vacation there. I was working with a woman by the name of Jane. She owned a retail business. And she had been working with an accountant who was not proactive. They were reactive. And as a business owner, what accountants have done historically is when we prepare the taxes, we give them estimated tax payments for the upcoming year. They never followed back up with her, and she made the payments that she had been told to. And her business declined this year. She had less profit to pay taxes on. And so she ended up getting a refund of $100,000 that year.
Which looks cool. That's crazy.
Yeah, it looks cool. But then you think about, as a retailer with a physical location, what kind of staff would that have allowed her to hire? What kind of inventory deals maybe she could have taken advantage of, her family have taken during the year rather than having to wait till April 15th there. So if I could offer just two tips to your listeners. First, if your primary source of income is from your W-2, just go Google IRS withholding estimator. The IRS has this great calculator on their website. It's going to ask you a very comprehensive list of questions. It will take data in from your latest pay stub there, and it will actually give you a W-4 that you can print out and hand to your payroll department so that you can try to change your withholdings for the remainder of the year so that you come out to as close to zero refund tax owed as possible.
That's a good tool.
Yeah. And the second tip I would offer, certainly nothing new, but if your primary source of income is from your business, you're operating a pass-through entity, S-corp, a partnership, you better be working with a CPA or an EA who is giving you updated estimated payments at least one other time throughout the year, if not reviewing that quarterly, so that you're constantly fine-tuning those estimates to, again, make sure you're not having a huge tax bill and you're not getting a huge refund.
Yeah. And I think the IRS should send out a medal if you get that zero refund.
Yes. Like
if you come in perfectly, you should get a big trophy or something in the mail saying, I did it or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would it be awesome if that became a status symbol?
Yeah.
I'm part of the zero refund club.
Yeah. If you see CPAs, that's like their biggest trophy in their lobby.
Yeah, yeah.
The zero refund club. That's hilarious. Awesome. Well, this has been a fun conversation. Yeah. I enjoy talking about taxes. I hope we made it digestible for the audience because it can be a topic that can make your eyes glaze over a little bit when you start diving into it. Kyle, thank you for coming on. I got two final questions here as we wrap up.
Shoot.
First one, how can people connect with you? And then the second one, to give you a second to think about it, is what's one thing you wish you had known about taxes and planning your taxes in your early 20s? But first, how can people find you or connect with you if they have questions?
So the best place to connect with me would be my website, proactivecpa.co. That's proactivecpa.co. I have a blog there. I also have links to all my socials. I'm big on LinkedIn. Would love to connect with any listeners on LinkedIn. So that's really the best way to connect with me.
Awesome. Now, what do you wish you had known in your 20s about tax planning?
Yeah, so the thing I wish I had known when I was younger is that premium advice is going to cost less than premium mistakes. I would have told younger Kyle, don't be afraid to invest in coaches and advisors who are going to help you succeed over the long term.
That's a mic drop moment to leave it on. Make sure you're willing to commit to a professional or commit to a coach or commit to someone who's going to help guide you in the right direction, who knows the landscape that you're about to go into, who knows what you're trying to do, and they can help guide you in the right direction, because we're going to all make mistakes, but if we try to learn from other people, they can help us avoid a lot of them. But Kyle, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Thank you so much to Kyle for coming on the podcast. That was a great conversation around taxes, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as we surely did, because I know we love talking about money, and taxes can tend to be, like I mentioned, a topic that makes your eyes glaze over. It's made my eyes glaze over plenty of times. I really hope that was a good way for you to start thinking about taxes. But let's get into the money talking point. The first money talking point is, how can we avoid taxes? And there is nothing wrong with avoiding taxes as long as you do it legally. If you just don't pay your taxes or just flat out don't file your taxes, then you're probably going to have problems with the IRS. But there's ways to legally avoid taxes. One of them is to contribute to retirement accounts. You have a traditional and Roth 401k or IRA. A traditional, we've talked about it before on the show, but a traditional is money that goes in pre-tax, grows tax deferred, and then you pay taxes on the entire withdrawals when you do take money out of the account. Now, a Roth goes in after you've paid taxes, and that money grows completely tax-free. So it's kind of the difference between, do you want to avoid the tax you're paying now, or do you want to avoid the tax you're paying in the future? And Roth is pretty much always the better option if you're young. Take that with a grain of salt and do your own research, of course. But if you have a long time for your money to grow, think about the fact of it growing without having to pay any taxes on it. If your money is going to double 2, 3, 4 times because you have such a long time horizon while you're investing, that money being tax-free is a huge benefit. Like, I'm understating it when I say huge. I need to think of a better word. Gigantic, enormous, massive. Think of the biggest word in your mind, and that's how big of a benefit the Roth can be when it comes to avoiding those taxes on your money as it grows over time. Now, let's also not forget about the gold standard, the HSA, the account I love the most. The HSA is tax-free in a lot of ways. If you're paying through your payroll, it's tax-free from FICA. The money goes in without being taxed. The money grows tax-deferred, but also it comes out tax-free. So there's really a whole bunch of ways to save on a whole bunch of tax and make it so the government never touches the money. Now, the key caveat here is that you have to make sure that it's being used for qualified medical expenses. Because if it's not being used for qualified medical expenses, there can be a pretty steep penalty and then you owe taxes on the money. So that's something to be very aware of. But I do want to mention the key strategy here with the HSA is that if you pay your medical expenses out of pocket with cash, you can reimburse yourself at any point with the HSA. And I've mentioned it a lot of times that my wife and I are not paying for medical expenses on our own. We're paying for them with the growth in the future. And even now it's grown a good amount. So if we do need to reimburse ourselves, we're using that growth still to reimburse ourselves, but we're using some cash that we have right now to pay for medical expenses. And then in the future, we'll reimburse ourselves once our investments have grown and grown and grown. And then we won't be using our principal. We'll just be using the growth from our investment accounts to pay for that medical expense. It's really a neat trick and can be hugely beneficial for people. Now, also another way to avoid taxes is giving, donating money, itemizing your deductions. Let's say you donate to charity regularly. You may want to save up your charitable deductions and then make them all in the same year so that you can get over that standard deduction amount. And then you can take a larger itemized deduction instead of always just chugging away at those charitable contributions and then always having to take the standard deduction anyways because your charitable contributions weren't enough. The one thing you don't want to avoid to try to avoid taxes is making more money. You shouldn't avoid making more money. We'll talk about that more in the next money talking point, but you should always be striving to make more money. Don't worry about taxes when it comes to getting a raise. But the last thing here that I want to talk about avoiding taxes is capital gain harvesting. In 2025, if you have taxable income below these following brackets for a single or married filing separately, it's $48,350. Head of household, it's $64,750. And married filing jointly, it's $96,700. If your taxable income is beneath that, and now your taxable income is your AGI minus the standard deduction or itemized deductions plus QBI, I'm throwing out a lot of numbers and acronyms right there. So if you have questions, please let me know. But just know that you take your AGI, your adjusted gross income, and then you minus even more money from it, which allows your thresholds and those income brackets to potentially be even bigger, you're going to be in a 0% capital gains bracket. That means money that's invested in a regular old taxable brokerage account that doesn't have any sort of stipulations or retirement dates on it, growth in that account that you sell during the year is going to be taxed at 0%. And what's everyone's favorite tax rate? 0%. Now think about that. If you're within that bracket, you may actually want to sell more investments to not pay tax on them and allow you to raise the basis by reinvesting that money. My wife and I did this thing exactly last year, and it was awesome to see it work out. Now our basis in the money is technically higher, which means that there's going to be less growth as the money continues to grow. That means we're going to be able to fit that smaller amount of growth into that 0% capital gains bracket in the future should we find ourselves under that threshold. And it's just going to be this amazing domino of contributing money with 0% taxes, raising our basis, saving money on taxes. That's a fun strategy to employ. And I'm getting all excited talking about it. So if you're thinking that just sounds like a headache, please talk to me. I'd love to help you set up a financial plan around 0% capital gain harvesting, because I think, frankly, especially for my audience, being mostly young adults or maybe early professionals or young professionals, there's a lot of opportunity in your first couple of years of your career where you're maybe not making a ton of money that you could be using this strategy to pay no tax on your capital gains. But let's move on to the second money talking point here. The second money talking point is, should I avoid making more money to avoid paying more taxes? No. The simple answer is no. You should make more money even if it means paying more taxes. Now, we could get into a discussion about only wanting to make money just for the sake of making money, but that's a different topic for a different show. So just know when I say you should always want to make more money, it's not necessarily in a like ethical or a moral compass kind of way. It's just saying you should always want to make more money when you're thinking about taxes. Because if you have to pay more taxes, that's a sign you're doing the right thing, but it also gives you more opportunity to potentially reduce your taxes with saving through retirement accounts, HSAs, or everything we just mentioned in the last money talking point. But when you're thinking about taxes, there's not a reason to avoid making more money. That does it for the second money talking point. Let's move on to the third one. How can taxes be simpler? Well, like everything else, take it one step at a time. Don't try to figure it all out at once. And I want to mention the tool that Kyle mentioned is that W-4 tool that'll allow you to get some help with figuring out your withholdings so that you're doing it right, and then it'll give you a W-4 that you can take straight to your employer. I didn't know about that, but now I'm going to recommend everyone use it when they ask questions about getting a new job and how annoying filing tax stuff is. Use the IRS's tools and it'll make it a whole lot easier. Because guess what? You don't want a massive tax refund. I truly do wish the IRS would give out a trophy or a medal for the Zero Refund Club, because that would be pretty awesome to be a part of. But you don't want a massive tax refund. Like Kyle mentioned, that's just you being a bank to the IRS with a free loan. And again, if anyone could take a loan and the interest rate was 0%, they would do it day in and day out. So maybe that's even part of a reason why the IRS doesn't strive to make the tax code easier or simpler or not have to file taxes, because you're just giving money to the government if you're getting a massive tax refund that you're not making sure to take care of through your proper withholdings at your work. Now let's think about everything else that you could do with the money if you weren't to get a massive tax refund. Let's say, oh, you get a tax refund of $2,000, okay? Where could $2,000 go to help you with paying off debt, paying off a mortgage, saving for a vacation that you never feel like you get to take? Maybe you could have done more around the house in terms of renovation or hiring someone to help you around the house. Maybe you could pay for college. And like Kyle's example, maybe you're a business owner and your refunds are even bigger, and you could have hired an amazing vice president or something of sales or some amazing financial person to help run your money and your accounting. or you could have hired an excellent retail staff. You could have hired some tip-top nice employees that could have helped your business grow even more. The list is endless because you could do literally anything else than just donate the money to the IRS. Sure, you're going to get it back, so it's not really a donation. But instead of just giving money to the IRS with the caveat of saying, oh, I'll get it back when I file my taxes, you could do anything else with that money. But make sure you take it one step at a time to keep your taxes a whole lot simpler. If it's getting complicated, remember that paying for advice is better than paying for a mistake. But that does it for this episode all about taxes. Thank you for listening to this one through to the end. If you have any questions for me or Kyle, send them my way. And links, of course, are in the show notes. We talked about a lot today, from busting tax myths to helping you figure out how to lower your tax bill. Don't forget about the power of capital gains harvesting. I could go on another rant about how amazing they are, but just rewind this episode and give it another listen. If you need help or coaching on how to do it as we near the end of the year, please reach out to me. I would love to show you how you can do this and help you figure out how to make some money in the best way, tax-free. And a quick reminder that my 200th episode is coming up very soon, and I need your questions for the AMA-style episode I'm looking to do. Please send them in so that I can answer your questions on the show, money-related or not. But thank you for listening to today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to my email list and subscribe to the podcast. Head over to moneytalk.show and submit your name and email right there on the homepage, and you'll be signed up for my email list. You can also use the contact page on my website to send me any questions that you have. If you're looking to get started with budgeting, I've partnered with My Budget Coach, which just recently launched a brand new app. So there's some great things going on over there, and it's a platform that connects your budget directly to me, your financial coach, and I'd love to work with you over there. The link is in the show notes. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. And thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.